Hey everyone, this is Stacey Lindis from Podcast PD, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual host. Make sure you check out all of the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Infused Classroom Podcast, where each episode, Tanya Abrith and Holly Clark take you behind the scenes with leaders in education, give you insights into what's happening in classrooms around the globe, and showcase online platforms that are disrupting education.
Hello, and welcome to the Infused Classroom Podcast. I'm Holly, your co-host, but my co-host today is not Tanya, believe it or not. It is one of my other good ed tech, or doesn't have to be ed tech, just good friends, Ken. And Ken, will you say hello?
Hello, in replacement of our good friend, Tanya. Happy to be here.
And Ken's coming to us from LA. But what's more exciting, and I wish I could do drum roll, is one of my favorite people, someone I think is doing amazing stuff, and I'm always reaching out to him every time I have something I'm doing, is Richard Wells, and he is in Auckland, New Zealand, which this is crazy. We're having such international guests. But Richard has the best story. And when I was a publisher at a different place, he's the first person I reached out to, and his book remains my top favorite book in that library. So Richard, would you tell people about yourself and what's going on there in New Zealand?
Wow, what an intro. Yes. My name's Richard. I'm originally from the UK. And so I came over to New Zealand in 2006. And as Holly says, I was amazed by the education system. So my wife and I were both teachers. And we both came over because we weren't so happy with the English education system. And we were amazed by this one. Once we got our head around it, because it's a bit different. So so here I am. I've written a book. I'd love Ken to be one of my friends because he's so cool.
We already are.
So you've written a book. Everything we're going to talk about today is so well laid out in this book. So please tell us about that.
So my book is called A Learner's Paradise, How New Zealand is Reimagining Education. And it's sort of it breaks down everything that's going on in all systems and the government stuff. What's happening in our schools. It's got examples of school stuff that's going on and what teachers are doing and how teachers are supported. And it's just a quick summary, really, of everything that amazes me about the place and why we've hit top world rankings on a number of things, which is incredible because we spend, compared with somewhere like the States, we spend a lot less on education than somewhere like the States. So we're doing an incredible job. And I'll explain over this podcast, I guess, a bit more detail and why. And I will explain some of the issues that we're having and things, and I'll be a bit open and honest, and I hope to be a little bit helpful to some people.
So I describe your book as a TED Talk in written form. It's funny, it's humorous, it's well-written, you're a great blog writer, you have a blog. So tell us really quickly about the blog so we don't forget about that, and we'll jump right in to what's going on in New Zealand.
Yeah, my blog is, you'll find me at eduwells.com, and the same Twitter handle. I'm covering at the moment a big series of posts on what my school's doing in New Zealand to adopt all these incredibly exciting things. Because of course, you know, New Zealand schools have had to go through this change, so we're going through it. And I've been blogging for 8 years now. It's an incredible story, typical teacher story. I started my blog to put online for 10 colleagues how to use an iPad as a teacher. And because it was called iPad for Schools, and it was just written for 10 people. And by accident, I just accidentally saw the stats one day and saw a couple of hundred thousand viewed it in the first year, and then couldn't believe it. And hey presto, you know, nine years later, I'm still blogging and have quite a readership around the world. So, yeah, it's amazing how these things happen by accident. But there you go. pretty good for somebody who failed English at school. So,
If you were having trouble in school with English, then how were they truly evaluating you and unleashing your ability to express yourself through written means? Because clearly, your writing is fantastic. I mean, that's a whole another part of the conversation. Maybe we can have.
Yeah. What are we measuring in schools and what's going on? Yeah.
Exactly.
So I became enamored with you at an iPad summit, and then you started to talk about your schools. And so now, can you explain to our listeners kind of what's happening in New Zealand and why I'm so obsessed with the country and its school system?
Partly the opposite to what's happening in the States. We're in a situation where the government is really pushing for change and modernization. And it's the schools that are having to sort of keep up to speed with that and keep up with that. And there's a bit of pushback from some of the schools. So we have a government that's encouraging student-led education, student-led projects. We're encouraging all public schools to get involved with, you know, outside community agencies, kids measuring their own progress, kids reporting their own. I mean, I'll give you a couple. I mean, one of the targets for New Zealand students is that they will reflect independently of schoolwork. So there's an expectation that kids will be blogging naturally about their own development, with it not being set as homework, you know, not being set as schoolwork. So there's a really high standard set where they expect schools to be environments that develop these human beings that naturally think, how am I developing? Like, let's talk about this. Let me blog about this, you know. So and in the schools that are the front runners with all this, there is evidence of that happening. You know, kids taking on sort of social action. And great story recently about, you know, talking about writing. I mean, a great story recently where a principal in one of these front-running schools, and a school that's mentioned in my book, where the kids approached the principal and said, "I hope you don't mind, but we're writing in the national newspaper this weekend, you know, and we've got an editorial piece, you know." And that's happened 7 times in one school in 1 year, you know, where...
Wow.
You know, the school's not setting it as work, the principal's not in charge of it, and the kids are going to the principal saying, I'm sorry, but we've got to write in the national press about this, you know. And so they had I think last year they had 6 pieces, actually it was 6, I think, in 1 year, you know. It's totally student driven by student demand, you know. Yeah, lots of things going on, lots of initiatives being pushed. Culturally responsive education is a criteria, for example. We're a very multicultural country, as most are these days. And teachers, there are 6 main criteria that teachers have to fulfill every 3 years in a portfolio. And one of those 6 is culturally responsive pedagogy and things. So being a bilingual and bicultural country, we have our Māori population, and we're expected that Māori can learn as Māori, you know. So it's not it's a totally they can. There is an expectation that every school gives every student Māori or what we call Pākehā, white or non-Māori. Any student should be able to adopt any approach, be it culturally Māori or white, through their learning, you know, and that's a student decision, and the school is meant to cater for that. So with all of that going on, you know, we have all this stuff going on, and we have all this thing, particularly in the elementary schools, the primary schools, incredible work going on with student led assessment and student, you know, tracking of their own grades and things. And then you get something like conventional, like the PISA tests, and you know, we outperform, you know, America very easily, you know.
Yeah, by a lot.
Even in a standardized test, you know, we then still outperform America after having all this sort of student-led learning and things. So incredible stuff. So I'm currently blogging this series about how my school is helping its staff and helping its community to adapt to this new sort of 21st century approach.
I remember when I was down for ULearn a number of years ago, and I had a brief conversation with Nikki Kaye, who was a minister of education. And yeah. That was when, if I remember correctly, the government looked at exactly what you just talked about in regards to not just a culturally responsive education, but making sure that the learning experience for every student in every school in the entire country would be responsive to their own identity, as well as expose them to that of what would constitute other. So to your point, if a white student says, you know, well, I'm aligned with this particular learning experience, and so I want to make sure that my learning experiences are framed around that, they still were exposed to the quote-unquote other, so that you have a much more culturally rich learning environment all the way through their schooling.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a system that expects students to build on their own identity, then they naturally are in classrooms with other students doing that. So you're getting, you know, self-representation, and therefore as they work together, you know, it's an encouraged environment that says, hey, like, we are different, and that's a great thing, you know, let's enjoy our differences and realize how that, you know, putting our differences together, we get more than the sum of our parts. It's in development, you know, we're not there yet, and you've got to work these things through, but it's to have that as a backbone of the education system, encouraged by the ministry, encouraged from the top, is quite amazing. I mean, even in high school assessment, you know, university entrance assessment, we still officially have the system where in history, if you're doing a history exam and you're aiming to go to university, the history exam assessments are still left open-ended. So it's, you'll, instead of you must discuss this particular thing in history, this event, it will say discuss how somebody enacted social change through a movement. And so even in your exam, you are expected that you can personalize the social moment that you want to talk about, because it reflects, you know, where you're from or whatever. So,
you know, and Richard, you're bringing up a valid point there. Because Holly and I have talked about it as well. That example you just shared is one of the characteristics or the conditions for what I would call an inclusive learning environment, because you're saying, here's something that occurred with a historical context, and there are multiple voices or multiple perspectives that are basically being encouraged and included during the process of answering that question. So in other words, you're not saying, this event occurred and tell me why this event occurred, with the answer being from one perspective or one opinion around that. It's like, no, let's look more thematically at, here's something that occurred over time, and now share your, you know, bring in, essentially that's an indirect way of saying, bring in your own identity, your own culture, your own understanding of this event to the answer that you provide. It's just, I wish more assessments were along the lines of truly inclusive, because it really does encourage more alternate perspectives, or the terminology that I use is more non-dominant voices.
It goes further than that, because in that same exam with an open-ended sort of question like that, you know, one kid will answer that from the perspective of a 19th century Maori politician, you know, because we had Maori politicians in the right back in the day, you know. And whereas in that same exam, some other kid might be writing about, you know, the civil rights movement or whatever, about one person having an impact on because the question's around an individual having an effect on the social change or something. So you get completely different answers in one exam, and all in school assessment or high school and university. You can get to university in this country without sitting an exam. So you can get to university through our credit system, through doing all what we call internal, like in-school project work. And on top of that, all of that in-school project work that counts for credits for university can also be merged between subjects. So these front-runner schools are including us ourselves now, are starting to put all these assessments together into what in bigger projects, and where the kids can gain credits by mixing it all and not doubling up on work. You know, why, if you're doing your history essay, or you write, you're doing
a lot. Why do you have to do English?
Yeah. So we're now in a position, even for university entrance, that we can now, you know, what some people would say, double dip and say, well, you know, I'm going to write my thing and I'm going to sign off on the English. And
what I've always wanted to know and wish I could answer for people when I brag about New Zealand is, what is a life of a high schooler like? Like, what do they come in and how do they end? And how is that different than what we know about US or other nations' education systems?
Well, the first starting point is the schools are, in terms of the way they're run and the way they're organized and the way that you organize learning, all schools are to a great extent quite autonomous. So this my school might be operating in quite a different way to the school down the road. We have the expectations with these high school credits at the end in terms of we work through, a lot of our systems work through cross-school moderation. So teachers have to send samples of work between the schools to ensure that. But apart from that, the school day can be very different in different schools. So some school, and as I say, we're transitioning as a country to this new official system in all of its layers. So some schools are still operating in a way that an American student might recognize. You know, you arrive at 9 and you go to lesson 1 and lesson 2. And a growing number of schools are now introducing and piloting or developing like more flexible days where, like the school that Ken's already visited, Albany Senior, for years now, and even more so now they've got a new principal who's come from a school down the road who's very much opening it up to whole days of sort of cross-curricular project work and things. So it can be different. It's very different in different schools at the moment, but certainly as a country, we are moving towards students having quite a proportion of the week to themselves. We're looking at next year, we're looking at introducing the equivalent of nearly a day in the week to literally develop passions around the things you really want to do. Because it's always that balancing act of, like, you can try to educate kids in the way that you want to, but if you lose the keenness, then it's an uphill struggle. So we're looking at all the wonderful kind of all those passion things that they can get into, the performers, the robotics, to boost our curriculum. We already do all these things in our curriculum, but to have them actually have some real serious time to do something properly will be fantastic. So I know more schools are introducing that idea of, and there's a well-being aspect to it as well, where you actually say, no, hang on, let's slow down and let's give you a bit of time to reflect and give you a bit of time to. The school, one of the schools in my book that gets mentioned, literally has something called My Time, and that's for all staff and students. And they literally they offer the time to the teachers as much as the students, and it's about getting together and reflecting and working on passions and developing a sense of self. Again, all tied into that sense of an important role that school has is developing your own identity and being confident in that identity. So our day next year is going to be much simpler. We'll only have about 3 things that will happen in any day in terms of timetabling. There are schools that do 1 thing a day.
Wow.
Not many, but we're looking at sort of 3 things in a day, and one of those things will always be either your sort of mentoring time. We're staffing it so that we have small mentoring groups, or one of those things each day is going to be is going to be your time, you know, like your passion time. So, and then all the learning is all cross curricular. So there is no single math lesson or single, you know, we've closed down the silos. And for some of the staff, it's really exciting. For some of the staff, they like the sound of it, but they're not sure what it looks like. And for some of the staff, it's really frightening. And when you've got 150 teachers, that's always going to be the case. But,
Yeah.
But generally, yeah, as people see more and write more, it's exciting stuff.
When I was at Albany, I asked a kid to tell me, what are you doing? Like, what's your coursework? And she said, you know, I kind of came in and I said, I want to learn history through these avenues. I want to learn math through these avenues. And she kind of described a situation where she said, this is the course I'm going to take. And at the end, she had to come and defend whether or not she had made that. And that is amazing because in that, I see where she may not learn the quadratic equation. And guess what? She's probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe she is going to learn it. But it's not going to be forced down her throat with the next thing being theorems and what have you. So that's what really was interesting to me, to hear how she was in charge of her high school experience, you know?
Yeah, but there's another side to that, though. There's another side to that, and that is...
Is there?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, because the thing is you...
I don't know.
You don't... Well, we can't agree on everything, Holly. I do think there is value in getting exposed to the unknown, because sometimes you don't realize you might have a strength or a passion in an area that if you're not exposed to it, then you never know. But
you don't think you would find that in a project-based learning experience?
You're talking about the ideal environment. And even Richard just pointed out, like, what's the government doing down there? And schools are still struggling even with that, where it's like, oh, my God, you know, the sky's the limit. But you're struggling with that because there is a happy medium, I think, between essentially free and open and some degree of structure. And when you say to it, an example you shared, it's like, how many students are going into a high school and they know exactly what they want to study? I mean, think about how many people go to a university and change their major. I mean, I changed mine 4 times.
But we're applying something to one kid who maybe knew, and maybe the kid who doesn't know, they help you find your way. Like, I don't know what they do there, but the fact that they were open enough to allow that kid to go a certain way is, I think, commendable.
I can partly answer your question in terms of what we're doing, because we're like Ken's saying, we're trying to find, particularly as we transition to a new model, I have to appreciate that, you know, there is that fear. And certainly with the parents who currently do really well in conventional schooling, who generally, you know, come from supportive or high socioeconomic background, you know, they're the ones who think they might be losing out because they're doing well under the conventional system. You know, they're compliant.
There's the equity piece.
They will compliant. They're compliant kids. They're told to be compliant by supportive parents, and they do well in those tests. And they're the ones losing out, or they think they are. So we're finding a middle ground where we have outlines. We've got these units of these subjects working together. We've got at least 3 subjects working together on something. But those subjects are still saying, well, we still want all the kids to be able to have exposure to this and this and this. We're just going to do that as a group of subjects rather than, you know, and we're going to find that common ground between the 3 of us. And we can actually just put everything in context more. So, and this is at the junior level. So this is our sort of 7s, 8s, 9s, and 10s, which in America is grade 7, 6, 7, 8, and 9, I think. So we're working. We are trying to find that middle ground to begin with and say that we are transitioning out of traditional subject lessons where you were guaranteed to have everything, you know, thrown at you. And still allow the subjects to say, well, we've got control. We want to expose them to all this stuff. There have had to be concessions. The math department have had to take a few of the things that they've always tried to cram in and say, well, maybe we don't need to do that now. We can do that later and things. But we're trying to find Ken's middle ground at the moment. Primarily for the teachers and the community to support them to say it's not crazy. And we are providing that structure, you know, the academic mentoring that every kid will get, which they don't get at the moment. You know, that's going to be, you know, timetabled, and that will be with the same person all year, and you'll have somebody separately tracking your general progress. And the my time,
which is important.
You'll have to report on the my time, you know, the free time. Use of the free time will be monitored by that mentor. So, yeah, so there is quite, we've talked a lot about structure and the fact that particularly as when they're year nine, when they're sort of grade eight, there's an element of needing and wanting a bit of structure. So,
well, and also this is what that girl told me. Like, I don't know where she had or was missing structure. She was just telling me in a 2-minute conversation something. And so I don't know what was happening there. But, and I mean, I'm open to, I like what you're describing. I mean, kids do need some bit of structure, but they also need this avenue in which they can find their passion.
We've merged these subjects and we've created a structure, but on the proviso that within that room or that within those zones, as we were going to call them, the students are still following the national requirement that they get to personalize the situation.
So when I want to ask something about this personalization, because I want to know what personalization means in New Zealand, because often in the United States, it means we're going to learn the same content in the same way, but you're going to respond to it, show me how you learned it in any way that you want. And that end product for some constitutes personalization. And I wonder if that looks different in New Zealand or what you would say.
Well, what I've covered in the book, again, is the front runners. So what is happening in New Zealand, and in the schools that are following all of the guidelines are doing both. So you learn the way that you learn. We have inclusive learning environments that allow for the fact that people learn best in different ways. And also even for high school assessment and university entrance, students are submitting all sorts of different types of output. So not only at a junior level, but even all the way through to university assessment, kids can submit all types. And it's just within each school, there are varying across the schools, and not so much the front runners, there are sort of varying degrees of that. So in some cases, there are schools that are definitely saying to kids, you can, the end product can be, you know, almost anything you want, from documentary video to essay or whatever. But we're going to all learn it the same way. And there, even within a school, you'll have one subject area who are allowing students to, because it's all, you know, it's filtering through the whole of the industry in the country. So even within a school, you'll have one department that's adopted a personalized learning approach and a personalized assessment. And some departments in that same school will be doing the same learning for all and personalized assessment. So as it filters through, we get a bit of everything really. But certainly everything is personalization at all levels is encouraged. All the way through to the assessment, and as I say, the government's saying that, and it's filtering through.
That's so amazing. You said there's like some front runners. If someone were to come to New Zealand and they could visit, let's say, 5 schools, would you feel comfortable saying 5 schools you think would be worth a visit?
It depends on your level, on your sort of age group that you teach. I've got 4 in the book that I visited in 2015 as a sort of research project that I did, and they're in my book. But certainly, you know, I've got to be careful here because, as I say, it would be good. My school would be a good visit because we were a conventional school. A lot of these front runner schools that I've talked about in the book tend to be the new builds. The government in this country now, I can say for at least 12 years, this country effectively hasn't built a classroom. We have built every single school, and there are many of them. There are tens of them across the country. They've all been built for modern learning to discourage teacher-driven classrooms, you know, to help. And again, that's to help the staff build a new mindset, you know. So a lot of these are very flexible. They've been built as very flexible environments. So we've got Hobsonville Point, which is a new build, and Albany Senior was the first of the new builds. Albany Senior does have a few more sort of standard classroom areas. There's ones in Christchurch on the South Island. But again, they're quite new builds. I've mentioned a few on my blog. If you go to edgywells.com.
Have you been to Pegasus Bay?
No, I haven't. No, not personally. No.
Me either. I've just watched them from afar.
I went to a great interview that's mentioned in the book called Breens in Christchurch. So that's a sort of a junior school teaching sort of grades 7 and 8, or 6 and 7, I think, but I mean in American numbers. And they'd just done some really simple things, really old school, conventional classrooms, and they'd just done some really nice things with putting some windows in and opening up the spaces so that it was more, everything was more visible. And then just giving the same six, you know, grade 6 kids the flexibility to move between 3, 4 or 5 rooms at any time, and then building, instead of taking those 4 conventional elementary classrooms, they then just built each one of the 4 as a different type of room, and then said to the kids, right, you've now got the same number of kids. We used to split you and do the same thing with all 4 classrooms. Well, now you get to each day you come in and you decide, you've already planned with one of the teachers. Now you get to work with all 4 of the teachers. You get to talk to them. You get to go to the type of room that you want. If you want your quiet room, you want your group room, you want your tutorial room. They had grade 6 kids booking in for the tutorials, like you might do at university. So they were teaching all day, but only in the tutorial room where you'd book in for your 20-minute tutorial. And there were only 10 places, and the kids were fighting for them, you know. And there was like audience seating for people who technically could listen but couldn't ask questions. It was kind of this whole arrangement of like student-led environments and that was a good new principal now since I visited, but that was a great school to visit. And then we've got we've got Point Chev Primaries being led by a great principal, Stephen Lethbridge, and there's a whole host. They are mentioned on my blog in various places, so you could search for schools on my blog.
Well, I know that I'm going to put your blog in my RSS feed so that I get your blog posts now. When you post them, I want them to come to my email because I want to watch this journey. I've been trying to watch it with you for a long time now, actually, but I want to stay up to date on that.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm just doing the series is called School Reborn, and it's going well. It's exciting. It's challenging, exciting. I'm trying to do a sort of warts and all approach. I'm mentioning quite a few of the things that come up, including the concerned parents and things. But generally, you know, it's amazing when we did a video to put it out to the community and explain what we were doing and what we were looking at, and you know, we had over an 80%, you know, positive feedback thing. So we were quite surprised at that. That was higher than we thought. So it's going on.
This is about the time we like to go on our podcast. I think people know that they can now follow you and get your book, get the book of the principal you just mentioned. And there's all kinds of way to stay abreast of what's happening there in New Zealand and to watch from afar, because I can say this from all the countries I have visited, and I have visited a lot. I believe that New Zealand is doing the best. And I get that from the kids, to be honest with you. So we appreciate your time. I'm going to put a link to your book. I'm going to put a link to your blog. And is there anything else that you might want to say? I don't want to stop from...
No, not really. I mean, we were ranked. There's a post on my blog. We were ranked number 1 under a separate piece of research that was done as a system. Interestingly, though, that research did grade the official system on paper more than what was actually happening in the schools. So that was quite accurate to some extent because we are playing catch up. But I think I am where I am because I am a Brit. I am a UK. I now have a Kiwi passport, but I am from the UK. And so a lot of the Kiwis here don't quite recognize everything because they're used to it. They've grown up with it. It's become so. Arriving from abroad, it really hit you how amazing what was going on here was. So I think that helps. But no, it's exciting. I'm excited to be part of it. I'm excited to be leading a school through it. And I'm excited to be doing podcasts like this one. So
Ken and I do hope to get to New Zealand again soon, so we will be knocking on your door. I need to see this firsthand, though. You have taken me on a tour via an iPad or MacBook, but I want to see a real tour.
Yeah, yeah.
So thank you.
Thanks, Ollie. Thanks, Ken. It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to the Infused Classroom Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or anywhere you get podcasts. Keep up with the conversation by using the hashtag Infused Classroom on Twitter and Instagram. And make sure to check out infusedclassroom.com. See you next time.